What if you could change your life? What if the sorrow could become joy and the darkness the light? What if you could heal not only yourself but those around you? Well, you can. This is Alchemy, and these are the Alchemy Sisters. Join psychic Jenny McDaniel and spiritual advisor Mandy Elam for a magical one-hour journey into esoteric spiritual discussions. DPR presents.
Hello and welcome to the Alchemy Sisters. You are here with Mandy and Jenny. Hi, Jenny. How are you tonight?
Doing pretty good, Mandy. How are you?
I'm good. I'm excited for our guest tonight. We have one of Jenny's friends, Charlie Birch, and it turns out Charlie and I have a whole lot in common, too. So I'm super excited for our discussion tonight. Welcome, Charlie.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's, I've heard Jenny talking about this project in all of its evolutions, and it just so happens we reconnected and were able to line up this chat. So I'm really excited to be a part of it and see where the conversation takes us.
We're so happy to have you here. Each week we have different guests, usually people who are kind of involved in healing or spirituality or thinking outside the box and kind of just wanting to be themselves and do better. And we have the best conversations, and they're always very spirit-led. So whatever you feel like talking about is so welcome, and you're allowed to say what you want and do what you want, and we welcome it all. So we're just excited to chat with you and get to know you.
Okay. Excellent. You know, Charlie has so many skills. I met her in Boulder many years ago, and when I met her, I instantly remembered her from a past life. I get this feeling whenever I run across my sister souls or brother souls or whatever you want to call it, and we instantly connected. And of course, we have past lives together, just like I have past lives with Mandy, and they're even showing some connection between Mandy and Charlie for past lives too. So I just love bringing the circle together and really, getting an opportunity to talk to my friends. I don't always get to, we move all around. Charlie moved to the East, Mandy moved to the East, I'm in the South, so it's just such a pleasure to connect and talk about divine things. Any particular topic you want to start with, Charlie?
I mean, I'd love to expand on the story of how I met you, because I'll tell our audience, you know, I grew up, I personally identify now as a spiritual person. I don't prescribe to any particular teaching. It's a more of a acknowledgement of there's something untangible about me and connection to something intangible. But when I first met you, Jenny, I was just at the beginning of really opening up to that ideology or that idea. I was raised in a atheist family, maybe like a little bit atheist, a little bit agnostic, but like spirituality was not a part of the conversation in any kind of meaningful way. And when I first met you, I was at our mutual friend Heather's house, and I was cooking her dinner, actually, because she's a fantastic artist, and she had done some, really affordable, fantastic logo design and graphic stuff for me for one of my first businesses, which was a more of a healing centered business. And I was cooking her dinner because I couldn't afford to pay her what I really thought she deserved. So I said, I'll give you this check and I'll make you three meals. Mm-hmm. And Jenny just popped in out of nowhere and said, hey, you know, I owe you, Heather, an energy work session for a barter, I guess you guys did with a painting. And she said, mm-hmm. but you're a Capricorn. You're both Capricorns. I'll do you both at the same time. Like, why not? And so I had never met this wonderful being, Jenny. And here she is, you know, laying me down in a art studio covered in chunky paint and abstract art. And I mean, you read me like a book. It was so profound, the level of detail you were able to offer me with literally having just met me. And it was just like, there's no way she could have known this. I didn't say anything or do anything that would have given her this level of detail. It wasn't even insight. It was like you were telling me things about my past relationship that were so specific and on point. And it was just really an important part of my process of opening up to, you know, the mystical and the spiritual. And so I really thank you for that. And, since then you've been a great support. And so I'll just say that. to start with, just to paint a little bit of a picture for everybody. But I think one of the things we had discussed talking about was, you know, my journey. I have worked as a healer. I've worked as a coach. I've worked as a, you know, virtual assistant. I've taught yoga. I've had a very interesting, indirect and kind of diverse professional career, professional experience at this point, which is still evolving. But really at the core of that is, you know, a journey towards healing, be it physical at first, trying to heal my back pain, which I have successfully done, trying to heal my sense of isolation or overwhelm with like everything being on me all the time, have to be, you know, pushing the boulder up the hill and opening up to trust and manifestation and all of these things. And then opening up to, you know, different ways of identifying and expanding my identity into the business sector, into the nonprofit sector, into education, into, you know, leadership, and all these different ways that we expand our earthly identities, if you will. So I don't know if that gives you guys anything to bite onto, but that's where I would start.
How did you heal your back pain? I know a little bit of the story from knowing you and spending time with you, but I think it'll be helpful for the audience to hear your remedy there, your tactic.
Sure. Yeah. So I was a dance performer since I was about 5. You know, my mom, I'm the girl that got signed up for dance class, not super surprising in our culture to hear about that. But I was also the girl that really loved dancing and didn't just do it as a hobby, and I took it very seriously, and it was a huge part of my identity. And in, I guess, this, maybe when I was like 14 or 15, I started having back pain, and, you know, I went to the doctor, and he said, you have, you know, pre-osteoporosis, or, you know, you have an uneven, one leg longer than the other, all these kind of guessing game things that doctors say when, you know, and no disrespect to doctors, but that wasn't the healing path for me with this particular thing. And I just time and again felt completely unseen and unheard by my doctors. You know, there was like more about them feeling good about being able to tell me what was going on when really they didn't know. And that hindered my healing journey to a certain degree. Like if you had just said, you know, I'm not sure, this doesn't make sense as a physical thing, that probably would have helped push me along. But it was like every time I got a physical diagnosis, it just reinforced this false belief that it was a physical cause, which it ended up not being. And it just kept getting worse and worse and worse until finally I, you know, it kind of forced me to look outside the Western medical model. My sister was an acupuncturist, and so I started working with her, and that opened me up to this idea of energy medicine. And I was always a student of psychology. So I started then to notice, you know, the mood that comes with my back pain and the mood that comes with my back not hurting, and these kind of correlations between my mood, my energy, my physical body, my pain, and my good days. And I don't remember actually how I got connected with this book, but it's a doctor based out of New York State named John Sarno, and he wrote a series of books having to do with the mind-body connection and the relationship between pain and, you know, unprocessed, sometimes repressed, but mostly unprocessed emotions, and the difference being like not active, like a repressed memory would be, you know, a repressed emotion would be like a moment of awareness that you're angry and then kind of burying it, versus things that, like experiences that come into the nervous system, into the energy body, and are so hard to understand, like they can't be fully processed by the conscious mind because you know, they're in too much in conflict with your sense of identity or with your cultural context, and they create so much internal dissonance that they just don't get fully sequenced and stored somewhere. So they kind of get stuck in the body. And then also this idea that, you know, thoughts that you have that are contrary to what you what your family system says is okay, or what your personal sense of identity says is okay, or your culture says is okay, sometimes gets stuck trying to sequence from the mind through the body. And so he talks about, you know, breaking down the idea that they're really separate, which I'm sure you guys would agree. They're not, you know, they're kind of a false dichotomy, the mind, the body, and then of course there's the spirit, which he doesn't really talk about that because he is trained as a Western medicine doctor. But, you know, obviously that's a piece of it. And so I literally bought this book when I was on my way from work, my day job at the psych hospital, to my dance rehearsal, and I had an hour in between, and I was like, okay, I'll stop at this Barnes & Noble and I'll get this book and I'll read as much of it as I can before my rehearsal starts. So I laid down on the lobby of the dance studio floor and put my legs up on the bench to, like, you know, flatten my lower back and make sure I wasn't sitting in my back and kind of rest my back. And I read the first chapter and a half, maybe. And when I stood up, I'm not even kidding you, I didn't have pain again for a year.
Whoa.
Like, it was like, boom. Like, it was like this introduction about this idea. And I think there's a lot of people in the world, myself included, and this is the rare instance where I had that, like, clear, like, just switch.
Right.
You know,
right.
And it's kind of like a drug. Like, you want every gross experience to happen like that now that you
right.
know it can, but it can't always happen like that. But it was really profound for me, and that's actually how I ended up going to Naropa to study dance therapy and body psychology, because I just became really interested in this intersection between, and I guess the body psychology was really more like, how do you move? What's your posture? And part of the reason I didn't finish that program is I realized I was actually much more interested in what they call health psychology, and the way that your personality, your temperament, your, you know, cultural blueprints, how those mental capacities impact your physiology, and how that physiology, you know, manifests itself either in health or in illness. And so for me, it was really looking at, like, I was trying to take on all these different female archetypes at once, and none of them were really fitting right. And that was causing a lot of friction and tension, like, in my body, in terms of, like, I'm trying to emulate my mother. I'm also trying to emulate my sister. I'm also trying to emulate my, you know, nanny, who was like my second mother, and all these internal conflicts were creating a lot of rigidity and inner conflict in my musculature and causing me a lot of physical pain. And so I had to learn how to just find my own expression of femininity and womanhood. And that was a journey in its own right. And then, of course, this idea of overworking myself and just being in a, like, the pain was also sometimes an expression of, like, a chronic freeze response, if you will, like fight, flight, freeze, faint. I'm a freezer, which is kind of unknown, but it's, you know, if you imagine, like, the deer in the headlights, like, that's the freeze response that you see in nature.
Yeah.
So that was literally my body, like, clamping down and, like, freezing in the face of stress, not breathing fully, not moving to sequence energy. So I learned a lot about how to do that. And I also realized that, you know, I needed to acknowledge the importance of rest. I was really good at work. I was okay at play, but I was not very good at rest. And that's one of the things I've started to talk about in my professional circles, this idea of the work-life balance, which I think is a false dichotomy. Like, it's not like work happens and then life happens. Like, ideally, I mean, actually, not even ideally, like, your work is a part of your life. It's not a separate
right.
thing. And a lot of people talk about work-life integration. But one of the things that I'm really curious about and has some interesting overlays with, like, Ayurvedic medicine, if you look at the dosha system and the qualities of the doshas, and kind of the definitions in, like, a dance therapy context of these energies of, like, working is very narrow focused, it's very task oriented, it's very linear. You know, if you have play, it's kind of circular and spontaneous and bubbly and present moment oriented. And rest is really about, in, you know, withdraw and not retreat necessarily, but kind of just yielding and settling and resting and nourishing. And I was really good at the work, at the super focused, hyper focused, super driven part. I was good at the social bubbly part and the creativity part of play, but I really wasn't filling in that third energy body of, you know, valuing my sleep and valuing, and it's not even rest like sleep. It's like, you know, anything you do to nurture your mind, body, spirit, like whether it's meditation or eating healthy or, you know, self-love or all these things that are nurturing you versus like positive things coming into your energy field versus things that you put out, be it work or play. And so those are kind of like the three, it's a lot, but those are kind of like the three facets that I really came to understand I needed to be conscious of and work with, these archetypes of womanhood and like how to be my own version of an adult versus like trying people on for size and having fights with myself about which one was better. You know?
And, oh, girl, I feel you. I've been there.
Right. And then this idea of chronic stress and how that affects the physiology of the body. And then this idea of, you know, finding a harmonious, it's kind of like the recycling symbol, you know, like the three arrows all feeding into each other, instead of just this constant expending of energy, but like how to receive, you know?
Oh, man. That's so brilliant. Charlie, you're amazing. Oh my gosh, Jenny, I can't believe I'm just meeting Charlie. We have such a similar story and path and adventure that we've both been on. And I've been on like a crazy healing journey too, because of all kinds of injuries that were lasting and repetitive and kept going. And much of it was emotional. Some of it's now definitely physical because of certain conditions. And I'm cleaning that up too at the same time, which is very interesting to know the difference and how to do that and where your pain's coming from. And I'm like, yeah, just sitting here like deciphering myself all the time. It's just so cool that I'm not the only one who does all that.
Absolutely not.
And it's amazing what's happened ever since, like, the number one thing in my mindset and, like, not criticizing myself and releasing that and replacing that with, like, such positive affirmations and, like, feeling into it with this sense of knowing and how quickly, you know, pain can dissipate. And I do tapping a lot and lots of other little things that are so simple to, like, maintain my, like, physical pain when I have it, not so much the emotional pain. So it's just so cool, and I'm just so excited, and I'm so grateful for your work and your journey and what you're doing and your gift to people. It's just brilliant. It's brilliant.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's, I was just joking with one of my clients who I do some freelance writing stuff for, and he's a little bit younger than me, but very conscious. He meditates. He's, you know, very much into the mindset work and more from like a leadership realm. And he's a substance abuse and recovery space. But he's like talking to me about, we're chatting back and forth about some changes I've made recently that came from, you know, realizing some of this stuff was resurging. Like I was having pain again. I was having anxiety again. I was like, okay, I need to get kind of back to the basics. And he said, you know, consciousness is kind of like just a pain in the ass. Like once you know awareness, once you're aware of something, you can't be unaware of it, you know? And sometimes it's like, man, it would be so much easier to just be asleep.
Oh, I think that too. And this, Jenny and I can vouch for you and all the other, like, you know, I guess high vibe and healer kind of community people, consciousness. This past ascension, this past spring was insane, and we all had to circle back in and revisit all kinds of things. That's why I'm back in New Jersey right now too. Figure out all kinds of stuff and heal up and sew up these old wounds and patterns that we thought we cleared up and that we thought we did, but actually we ended up having to go a little deeper for. But I think there's going to be a lot of light after this last one. I think it was rough, but I think we're all going to like kind of like getting healed up and connecting with one another, and we're going to have some like really good energy over the next, like, you know, little bit here. What do you think, Jenny?
Oh, absolutely. And I want to touch in on what Charlie was talking about and how listening to the body can give you so much information. And I tell my clients, because I'll come in to get a massage and they'll be all irritated. They're like, my damn arm, it hurts. It won't stop hurting. It pops up every once in a while. And I'll be like, okay, first of all, your body's going to heal a lot better with a, a more positive frequency. I know you're frustrated, but if you can shift that dynamic, it's going to be wildly beneficial for your healing. And I try to explain to them, I'm like, the body is like a baby. It doesn't talk. So it gives out signals or symptoms of an imbalance. And if you're wisdomatic and you look in and you start digging around there, and then maybe even pairing it with a couple stretching if it's physical, or, you know, a healer if it's psychological, you need someone to help you sort through things. But if you just take that symptom as not a punishment, but more of a heads up, you can come at it with a whole different angle and say, okay, my body can't talk, my shoulder's hurting, I should stretch it, maybe I should do less push-ups or whatever people do, and just start looking at it and giving it what it wants, because it's crying or screaming or talking to you, and it wants you to hear it. And then sometimes, you know, it's not in words, so you have to decipher it, translate it, look in. It could be partially spiritual, energetic, and psychological, or physical, energetic, and psychological, or whatever it is. And it's just asking for a little attention. And I'm so glad that you gave it to yourself, and then now you can project that energy out to other people. I often say, when you're a healer, you're your own first client, and you do your own work, and then that just branches out into holding space for others, and then we continue healing and learning, and then branching it back out and giving it back to the people. So yes, I agree with Mandy. Thank you for being here. Thanks for showing up for the big happening. We often talk about on here how we're kind of like in a battle. It's an energetic and spiritual battle of heart over ego. And if we can lean more into the heart, we can be a more heartful dynamic and save the planet and not use up all of its resources and be more heartful in that way. But right now, ego is ruling the roost. And in the non-physical, when we incarnated, we were like, okay, we need the big guns. All right, we need the rogue soldiers, the ones who are going to come in and to be neck deep in the mud, but keep going. And I applaud all my fellow healer, artisan, old soul friends, because it'll take us all to make this change. And it's a pretty exciting time to be alive and to have incarnated.
Pretty wild ride. I'll say that for sure. You know, I touched on this kind of swirly, indirect ball of yarn that has been my walk through life. A couple years ago, I think actually this was probably just before I met you, Jenny, I went on a trip to see somebody in my life who, you know, hadn't really been in my life and wanted to try to get back in my life. And long story short, I did not leave or really come back or keep that person in my life, but I did get a tattoo on that trip. And it's the heart chakra petals. And the inside is a labyrinth. Cause I was like, you know, like if I have to, the hardest times, like the times when you're just like, come on, man, like, come on, like throw me a bone, you know? And that's the times when you really have to remember that, like, I don't know that I necessarily believe that everything happens for a reason. I think that's an oversimplification and maybe a little bit of the ego tap. I think everything happens exactly as it needs to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, loving your path and trusting that this is needing to happen. Like, it's your life is just a flower opening, and one petal opens a little bit faster than the other petal opens a little bit faster. And sometimes they bump into each other, and sometimes the sun, you know, makes them hide away, and sometimes it opens back up. And this idea that, you know, there's a wrong turn, I don't think that's true, because I think it's just everything is unfolding. And that's not to say that we can't make choices. But I think, you know, our choices maybe impact the physical experience we have, but ultimately the way we go through our life, the spiritual path is going to just happen the way it needs to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was listening to this recording of my teacher. He's been my teacher for about 10-ish years. He's been channeling an entity named O'Brien since the 80s. He's brilliant. And he had a little piece that he sends out some of his recorded sessions with groups of people, and it's very cool. And sometimes I like them more than others or whatever. But the last one he sent was unbelievable. He was like, if you really want to be the most heartful, if you want to be the most effective, you wish people not for what they want, because that's their ego deciding that it thinks it knows what it wants all the time and it's right all the time. Wish for them their highest and best good. You're going to be coming from it from a more structural, learning, growing, optimal place. And it just really rang so clearly to me, because I often find myself, you know, telling friends and people, oh, I hope you get exactly what you want and that you deserve it and that's for you and that's wonderful, when really I can have a bigger hold or push or punch, so to speak, when I just open it up even bigger and let spirit and the non-physical and divine, of course we can steer our way, but allowing what to unfold, what is going to advance us more spiritually, psychologically, emotionally, physically, whatever you're steering toward, and wishing for them the highest and best good. And I've heard people say this to me and I'm like, oh, that has a nice ring to it. But now I'm really like, oh, okay, yes, I see how that's way more heartful.
Mm-hmm. I've been super mindful of that since we listened to that. It makes so much sense, and I'm trying to make sure I use those words. And just to kind of add for our listeners about what Jenny and Charlie were just discussing, when I find myself in those places of like, ah, throw me a bone, or this is so frustrating, or okay, what do I do? Or, you know, or we have to grow, or it's uncomfortable, or whatever. One of my biggest tools and resources that I use, and I encourage everyone to use, is to simply drop to an attitude of gratitude. And when you're really frustrated, instead of focusing on what you're frustrated about, reframe and focus on what you're grateful for in that moment. Okay, I'm upset, but I'm grateful that, you know, I had this meal today, and I have this roof over my head, or whatever it is. Because when we switch our energy, and we open ourselves up from, excuse me, my voice is getting tired today, and we open ourselves up from overwhelm, which can be any sort of lower vibrational feeling, such as guilt, shame, resentment, jealousy, sadness, grief, anything that's just, oof, like overwhelming, it blocks the universe. And the universe really wants to support you and give you the things for your highest good, but it can't do that when it senses overwhelm. It just says, oops, like, you know, this, like, sweet little light being is overwhelmed and I can't give it more right now, you know, if we think about it in kind of human terms. And so as soon as you change that energy, especially during your darkest times, and you switch and you're like, you know what, I'm actually really grateful for this stuff, you're able to get what you need and what's best for your highest good much quicker. And I've noticed that in my personal experience. So there's always a turn where there's always a tool, and where there's a will, there's a way.
Well, I would love to build on that. I mean, two things. I'll tell you a quick little story, and then if I forget, remind me that I want to tell you about the sound healer I know. But the first thing is, my boyfriend, his family is originally from Massachusetts, and we just drove up there from South Jersey, which is about a 6-hour drive, and you have to go through New York City, which is not a land made for cars, and definitely not a land made for going throughout, you know, in one side and out the other. So it's a kind of a stressful drive. And we're the East Coast. We're from New Jersey. He's from Massachusetts. We're a classically road raged culture. And we both noticed, you know, this resurgence of road rage after moving back from Colorado, where everyone's just kind of like chilling, going under the speed limit.
Dude, it's survival. You have to once you're back here.
It's the same So I'm giving him the directions, and he's, you know, trying to keep his cool. And I said, all right, here's a challenge for us. Can we get through the rest of this road trip without, you know, copping out of interesting conversation by just griping about other drivers? You know, can we find something more interesting to talk about than how stupid that guy in the Jeep is, or how annoying that person that's going slow in the fast lane is, or how much better we are, really? Because that's all we're saying, really, when we're griping about other drivers, is how much better we are. Our egos are so much better drivers than these other people on the road. And so that's exactly what we did. You know, we said, okay, if I notice that I want to start griping about another driver, instead of being like, oh man, why didn't that guy use his turn signal? You just say like, I'm so grateful I know to use my turn signal out of respect for other drivers. You know, and just
Brilliant.
It right in that moment of gripery, like you're talking about. And I think that's part of what is, no one's saying don't acknowledge the world around you, but use it as a reminder of how you want to be better instead of how you are better.
Yeah, and it's just like an exercise and a practice. Driving is great for that. It's like a beautiful way to consciously practice reframing your mind and your decisions and how you choose your reactions. Once you become really aware of what's going on in mindfulness, you know, and what you're doing, then you can control it and say, all right, I'm not going to go down this road, but I can go down this road. And I can, mm-hmm. you know, instead of concentrating on, you know, this jerk in front of me, I can concentrate on how I'm doing a good job and how that's sharing good energy, you know, with the road right now or whatever I'm doing. And I love that. I think that's brilliant. And I totally invite our listeners to give that a whirl, you know, because it'll only benefit you.
Totally.
I love those little practices. I do it for myself because I notice being an empath and sensitive and living on a rather egoic planet, I notice that my nervous system has been ran pretty hard in this lifetime. And I do lots of things to service that and to work with that and what have you. But for example, if I'm running late for work, which doesn't happen all the time, but if it does happen, I would receive this ungodly amount of anxiety. Now, I know that if I'm running late and it happens to be so late that the client's going to be sitting there by the time I get there, I'll just call my work and they tell the client I'm on my way, I'm in traffic, or I'm running a minute late. It's really not that big of a deal. My clients aren't spazzes. They don't freak out if they don't get right on the table on the hour or whatever. So I know in rational terms that this is manageable. It's not really that big of a deal. But the overwhelming sense of quickness and hurry and, oh, I'm going to disappoint someone, I had to really like manage that and be like, wow, that can't be good for my nervous system. That's not even helping me get there quicker. It's not doing anything. I have to learn how to manage myself. So when I am running a few minutes late, again, it doesn't happen often, but when I do, I use those little tricks like you were talking about, like let's test ourselves. Let's see if I can breathe through this, push out the anxiety, replace it with diligence and effectiveness so I can get out the door and get there and do my job and what have you. And it's hard. It's hard to retrain things that just have always been there and have come up that you didn't even notice. And I think that that's why it's so helpful to be an educator or a teacher or a healer or just even be a friend to somebody and you know, help them see and become aware, because once we become aware, even if we don't do the work to nip it in the bud then, we're aware of it, and that's the first step, and then doing something about it comes later if you choose to do that, which is beneficial usually.
Absolutely. Yeah, so I'd actually love to, that was my other thought with this, what Mandy was talking about, and then Jenny, with this idea of overwhelm blocking abundance, because it, you know, you're not focused on anything because you're too overwhelmed. You're just kind of bouncing around energetically, and then therefore the universe doesn't know what to send you. Mm-hmm. And what it reminds me of is I don't know, years ago when I first started my coaching business and I was listening to webinars and seminars and summits and all this online stuff all the time, I heard a woman who was a guest interviewer like I am here now, who was a sound healer, and she worked specifically in the space of, you know, personal wealth generation. You know, how do you clean up your money mindset? How do you clean up your energetic field around money? And she's talking about, you know, scarcity and abundance. And we tend to think that there's scarcity and there's abundance. And that if you want wealth, and, you know, this applies, of course, to wealth of any kind, not just financial, but if you want wealth, you're supposed to think abundance, abundance. But that actually abundance on a sound, on a vibrational level, she's saying, you know, imagine if sound is water and scarcity is you're in a desert and there's no water. And you're like, like that's kind of the sound of scarcity. Whereas if imagine your abundance and your water, you're in the middle of the ocean with, and all there is water. There's just so much that it's like, it's like this like panicked kind of like hyper aroused kind of energy. And she said, and that is overwhelming. And so sometimes when we open up to abundance, we actually overwhelm ourselves and therefore we block it. And she said, so what she does with her clients is she introduces the sound vibration of wealth, which if you're water is more like a dam. It's like a constant stream coming in, a gathering and an expanding and a pooling of it, and then a constant stream out, so that there's a control of how much you're in touch with at any given time so that you don't get overwhelmed. And she says the sound of wealth is it's like, damn girl, that is so off. It just struck me so much because it really can be. I mean, and it's, you know, not dissimilar to what we were talking about in the beginning with this idea of these, you know, if you have just work and play, this linear energetic pull, like, you know, it can snap, it can bend, it can break. But if you add in the rest, it's this triangle or it's a circle all of a sudden, because 3 points can be, you know, linked together with straight lines, but they can also be linked together with arcs, which make a circle. And it's the same kind of thing where she's saying when you have a polarity, it's really extremes in two directions. But when you add something in the middle and you can pull it in any direction and kind of make a more full shape, there's a lot more potential for health in that, like in that paradigm than there is in, you know, a dichotomous paradigm. And I thought that was just, and the use of the sound. I mean, you can just feel that in your body, the difference between and like, and, you know, I mean, it's just, which one do you want to live in? I want to live in, you know.
Thank you, Charlie. That is so brilliant. And I love that. And it's like so fitting because it's been a discussion with, you know, money is always a discussion with everybody, but Jenny and I are building a business and we've been really talking about, you know, what we want to attract and what we want to don't, and what feels good and what doesn't. And that really resonated a lot with me, especially like I was working with a coach for a while and, you know, you get all this pressure, like you need to charge your worth and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, yeah, well, I'm priceless. Like, I'm a human. What do you want from me? Like, I had the hardest time with all this. And so, and I'm such a, I feel into things so much more. So you just gave me such clarity and such beautiful tools. So thank you. I love that.
Awesome. I'm glad. I can't take full credit. I'm the conduit, but I'm happy to be a conduit
still
in this instance. Yeah. I wish I could remember her name and give, you know.
Well, she'll come around.
It's all the same. It's collective. The collective consciousness, you know, so.
Yeah, you know, and I think that that's so brilliant, that healer, that sound healer. It's such brilliant information. Thanks for translating it to us and bringing it to our attention because, you know, I work with a lot of artisan type people. We're healers, artisans. Usually millions of dollars isn't in our back pocket, you know, so we just work not necessarily from a space of always scarcity, although that could absolutely happen, but we work from a place of fair and heartful energy. And sometimes abundance will look wildly different for each person. Like you said, sometimes if someone asks for abundance, like they're wanting to move through their scarcity issues, their feelings, and they think abundance, 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 and then it could come crashing down on them, and then their overwhelm happens, and then the universe pulls back. So I think that trickle in or allowing it to come in like a dam, like you said, is wonderful imagery for how we want the flow to go. Because sometimes I get overwhelmed with clients and then other times I'm, you know, slower. So I'm like, when it gets a little slower, I'll open up the space to manifest more. But if I were to open up that space to manifest more while I'm already kind of like maxed out, I could overwhelm and then burn out. And then before you know it, I'm having to take 2 weeks off or something, you know? So it is important to bring it in. Each person's going to be different, whatever their flow of the dam is, whatever that looks like for them, so that we can manage it and work through it. Because money is weird. It's a weird form of power. It can be used as good. It can be used as bad. It can be used as neutral. So it's definitely something that people struggle with. And maybe our highest and best good isn't to become a millionaire. I don't know. I mean, it'd be cool to be a millionaire, but maybe in our soul's highest quest, it doesn't look like that. It looks like other things of abundance, knowledge, people, however that looks. So it's a tricky space. And people, you know, just people being honest with themselves of what that looks like for them, what they're comfortable with, and then you take it in steps. I mean, Bill Gates mm-hmm. didn't become a billionaire overnight, you know?
Right. And some people are born into it and
yep.
and are still miserable. And, you know, I mean, I've been reading this, I don't know the author's name off the top of my head because I'm always more of a title person, but it's called You're a Badass at Making Money. And it's a spinoff of You're a Badass at Life, which was both
oh,
of
yeah.
them. New York Times bestsellers, but I was in the airport the other day flying out of Atlantic City Airport actually to go down to New Orleans, which I love New Orleans. I was really excited to get there, and my flight was delayed by 4 hours because there was issues with the computer, so I was milling around the bookstore in this little humdrum airport, and I just saw the book cover, and it's green and yellow letters, and I was like, oh, I love that book cover. I just want to, what is that book? So I thought, you know, it could never hurt to read through a different variation of the same. I mean, it's all, any money mindset book you buy is going to have basically the same thing, which is exactly what we're talking about here. It's like, you know, it's all about your vibration and your, what you believe is possible. But I thought I just find it helpful in any area that you want to study, the more voices you can hear, the more variations and paraphrases and, you know, just more likely that you're going to find the one that really resonates with you. Like I had that experience with the book with healing my back pain, you know, like I read lots of things, but that one for some reason just spoke right to my, you know, most basic layers of my human mind and was like, okay, yeah, we'll reprogram the whole flipping brain around that idea, you know? And so I always try to buy those books, and she's really talking about that, you know, it's this idea that money is it's just like a car is a tool. Like, you know, you can use a car to drive your grandmother to the doctor, or you can use a car that you bought that's fancy to make your siblings feel crappy about themselves, or you can drive, you can use your car as a weapon. I mean, money is the same way. You know, you could help a family member pay for an important operation with money. You could rub it in your sibling's face that you made more, you know, or you can use it as a weapon in the world in a bigger way by just letting, and it really is the greed part. That, you know, the greed, you can be greedy with any tool or any resource. You can be greedy with food. You can be greedy with water. You can be greedy, you know, even with spiritual tools, there's the potential to be greedy and like hoard them away. And that's where, yeah. I don't know, I always struggled in a business because you guys are talking about building a business. You know, we're in the age of content marketing, right? We're in the age of content is king, and you trickle things of what you know, and here you are, you guys are doing a podcast, this is a content, piece of content, like, you know, what is the right amount of information to share, and what's the right amount of information to hold, and if you think about it just as like, you know, how can I get this person to pay me to access my knowledge, because, you know, and you get like greedy about your knowledge or greedy about the money, and forget that it's an exchange, that yes, they're buying your services at some point, you know, but it's also like the amount of energy maybe it takes me to get on here and do a podcast. I mean, I used to host a podcast, is maybe about the same amount of energy that it takes somebody to get to a place where they're even aware that they should search for this resource and find it online, you know? So there is a certain level of energy exchange that happens with a free resource, and there is a certain amount of energy exchange that happens with a paid resource. And it just happens that one has currency that is tangible or measurable or, you know, mathematical, I guess. But that it's really all just an exchange. And actually the yoga studio that I'm involved with, I work on their website, and I used to teach in there for a while, in Ventnor that I mentioned to you, is that they have all their pricing on the website and on the little desk when you sign in. It doesn't say anything about, you know, price. It says energy exchange, yoga class for $20. You know, it's not like cost. It's very intentionally using this language of energy exchange. And especially now that we're getting into an age where, you know, coins are on the out, paper money is even going to be on the out. All money really is just numbers in the interweb in these massive computers, which are just really energy, which are, you know, I mean, it's like even less tangible than it used to be. So even more so now is just energy. And, you know, if you hoard it and you're greedy, then you're not really, even if you have an abundance of cash flow, you don't really have an abundance in your mindset. You don't really have a wealth in your mindset, because you wouldn't be hoarding it if you felt like it would always come back to you. You know, the hoarding is, there's not enough of this, so let me hold it all and I can't share.
Yeah, it happens quite often, where I call it like the millionaire syndrome, where they're like, once I break a million, I'll be successful, I'll love myself, I can slow down, I can relax. That million comes and goes, and they're looking for another million. They're shooting for that next space. So at some point they become like capitalism embodied, and nothing is going to satiate them, which on some level is good if you're experiencing love and excitement and going through the journey with, fun and light energy. But when you're constantly reaching for the next step, you're really having a hard time, I'm imagining, enjoying where you're at currently. So it can be a very vicious cycle that, making more money and hoarding it because there's not enough, and then I need to now make more. And, it's a weird vibe, no doubt.
I mean, I think that, circling back to more of like the healing work and space, as training as a therapist and working as a coach and being a personal development, self-help kind of junkie as in my own right. I think what's really important to remember, and this kind of loops back to the journey thing, is like, just because you've outgrown your life and you're ready to up-level your life in whatever way that is, doesn't mean you're broken and that you need to fix anything. Mm. And so if you have a mind map that tells you, every time I need to do personal improvement, it's because something's wrong or something's broken in me, that's going to just keep you kind of like a boomerang. Like, you're just going to constantly be like bouncing around, because sometimes there are things that are broken, but you are not fundamentally broken. Like, you are on your journey. And if you can look at it from like, my baseline is exactly what it needed to be at that moment, and next time I'm going to be in a different place because I grew into myself, instead of like trying to go in with your mindfulness and like in your awareness and like pick apart your psychological blueprint and your emotions and all this, your body, and picking it apart and trying to find like something to point at and be like, that's the problem, fix it. Right. Like, that is not, it's like the people you see at the gym, you can tell the difference with the people at the gym who are there because they love to be physical in their body. They love the challenge of the gym. They love the movement. They love the heart rate. They like to feel strong. And the people who are there because they hate themselves.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You can see it from across the room. Like, there's this, no disrespect, but there's this lady at my gym. Like, if she's on the elliptical machine, then I go to the weight room. And if she's in the weight room, I go in the elliptical room, because it's just painful to watch her work out. It's like, just damn you, body, mind, and one of my mentors, one of my favorite little snippet quotes, but he's an embodiment practitioner. He worked a lot in corporate leadership, team building, kind of training context, helping people get in touch with their body and the wisdom of the body. And he says, I always open it up and I say, listen, guys, here's the deal. Your body is not a brain taxi, like, your body is not there to just carry your brain around through space. That's not, if that's what you think, like, you're missing the point. And so, to the same thing that Jenny was saying, if you have a client coming in on your table, like, my damn elbow, it's such, it's all messed up. Like, that's what I had to figure out and really track when I was healing my back stuff. And still with all, any kind of, quote unquote physical symptomology that I get, it's like, okay, if I have bad skin, why do I have like shame on you, bad skin? Like, if you really like think about that, like, your body is part of you, and there is science, like, from Johns Hopkins, like, I love a little woo, but like, there's also some hard science on this stuff that like, your psychological archetypes and pieces of your identity, like your 5-year-old version of yourself, your 6-year-old version of yourself, your 12-year-old version of yourself, those things live in your mind in untimestamped ways, and they hang out in certain parts of your body in somatic memory. And so if, it's your 4-year-old having a hissy fit and making your back hurt, and you're like, oh man, my bad back, oh, what a crap deal I got here. Like, that is you talking to, like, think about how you talk to yourself, whether it's mental or physical, and especially physical, because I think that tends to get less airtime, if you will. People get that they're their mind, but I don't think, at least in our society, a lot of people don't get that they are also their body, and that the way they relate to their body is a totally observable metaphor for the way that the mind is operating. It's like, why try to toil over what's going on in the mind and just look at your behavior? Look how you treat yourself.
Absolutely. I often tell my clients, you know, imagine just for a second, I take them into some imagery. I'm like, imagine how it feels. They're usually on the massage table all spaced out, so it's easy to maneuver them into some imagery. But I say, imagine how it feels when somebody does something kind for you. Depending on the person, I'll say, well, imagine if your son picks a couple flowers out of the neighbor's yard. No, out of your yard and gives them to you. And how does that feel when somebody thinks of you in gestures, whether it's a verbal thing or a physical thing, or maybe they'll do something for you. I go, your body feels the same way when you do that for yourself. And we forget that. And then we lean into other people to help us feel a certain way when really we can do it for ourselves. And of course, it's nice to have supportive people around you that say lovely things and, you know, assist you and love you and what have you. But that's a job for us too. And first and foremost is to give ourselves that yin, that rest, or that whatever it is, whatever our body's calling for. And we are giving ourselves the present. And even though we're giving it to ourselves, our body is responding as if somebody else is doing something for us. So even if you don't have the thoughts, like if you go for a walk and that's good for you, you might not have the exact thoughts if your son gave you some flowers or whatever, but the body responds to that as a gift. And it doesn't see the physical things. I mean, it might see it, but it works with the frequency and the energy and how you respond and what that does inside your body. And people are like, oh, because it's just been beat into everyone's head that you put yourself on the back burner, especially women and mothers and what have you, put yourself on the back burner. You got lots of responsibilities. You don't need anything. You just got to give. That's very unhealthy. And a lot of those people, and not a lot, but some of those people end up with like autoimmune disorders. Well, that's the body attacking itself. They burnt something out without, you know, reapplying some energy back into themselves. And that's the body's way of saying, you spun yourself out. Now we're going to make you pay attention to yourself because we're going to flare up, or we're going to give you pain, or we're going to, you know, whatever that is.
I burned out hard, and I had to like pull myself back from severe adrenal fatigue. Jenny, it was bad. I was not in good shape, and everything was broken. And it got to the point where I wasn't even speaking my truth, and my vocal cords shut off. But you know what? I grew up as a little girl in Jersey, and if I was going to learn anything, it was to suck it up mentality, and work hard. And it stuck with me for so long, and that's probably why you ended up spending so much time in that area too, Charlie. You know.
Yeah, I mean, I think what Jenny's saying, this idea of can you do that for yourself? Can you do for other people, for yourself, what you do for other people? And if you kind of look at it, Brené Brown is one of my favorite writers of the modern, you know, day. And her kind of core concept is you can really only love somebody else as much as you love yourself. So if you are a chronic caregiver, like I am, I'm a chronic caregiver, and I do that in my work life. I do, you know, by doing more than my share of the work, I try to take care of people by taking on more workload. I try to take care of people in my personal life, you know, all these things. But really, if you're not kind to yourself, if you're not compassionate to yourself, if you're not, you know, nurturing with yourself, you can't really know what that feels like to do it to somebody else. If you can't give yourself permission to do it for yourself, you also can't necessarily give yourself permission to receive it from somebody else, because your primary relationship is with yourself. And I'm a believer that, you know, everybody treats the people around them just a little bit, not even better, but like less intensely than they treat themselves. So like when I worked at the psych hospital, this is what I would tell myself over and over, like these poor kids, you know, that had behavior problems and they were, you know, aggressive and violent and all kinds of, you know, yucky identifiers. And I would just think, oh my God, if you're that mean to me, like if I feel that miserable when I'm around you, then how miserable must you feel? Because you're the source of this, right? Like that is the energy that you are pulsing and radiating out. And I'm just touching it.
Right.
But you're like saturated in it. So if you saturate yourself in love, then you will love people around you. If you saturate yourself in compassion, you will share that with people around you. If you try to give it to other people without giving it to yourself and you don't know what it feels like, what your version of love feels like, what your version of compassion feels like, whatever you're giving that other person is not necessarily going to feel good. It's just going to be like what you think it looks like or sounds like, but it's not going to be what it feels like because you cannot give to someone else something you don't have.
So true. It's so true. And you can feel it on the receiving end. Like, everyone knows people that will literally break themselves in half to do for others, when really the lesson there is just to have healthy boundaries. Like,
right.
You know, hey, I can't get to that this week. I might not even be able to get to it next week. I will catch up with you. And it's hard for people to say that. They want to do, they want to help, they want to be of service. And that's a wonderful skill. But if the healthy boundaries aren't there, you're going to tap yourself out and people are going to feel it. So you show up to help them move and you haven't had any sleep and you're groggy and you're cranky and whatever. It's better off to just say, no, I can't make it, because you know you'll be bringing a certain dynamic to that space. And then people start to feel guilty, like, oh, I wish they would have said no. And it just starts this whole cycle of egoic backlash.
Yeah, I always say, you know, the saying of just do what you said you're going to do. I think that's like, okay, sure. But like, why not just say what you're going to do and do it? You know, the difference between like, oh, well, don't say you're going to do something and then scramble around and figure out how to make it happen. Figure out what you can do and then say it.
Brilliant.
You know, it's such a subtle difference. But if you think about it from like a, okay, now I'm going to action this. Like, how many times do you say yes because you hope you can do it? And then you can't, and then you feel bad, and then you broke a promise. But if you just really stop and say, like, can I do that? No, maybe not all the way, but I can do, you know, 75% of that, or I can do a slight variation of that. And then, you know, just say what you're going to do.
I love that. I also like the concept, especially for self-care and just, you know, just the whole energy of it, of not saying yes when you really mean no. And it really helps you to start creating boundaries and stuff, and helps you start taking back some of your energy that you're always giving away. And it's hard to do. It's so hard, especially for people who love to give, you know, and are our givers, and, you know, to say no sometimes, but it's really vital often. And just like what Jenny was saying, like, if you're saying yes and you really mean no, like, it changes the whole energy of it. And then there's all this like guilt and yuckiness.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I think Charlie should have her own show, don't you, Mandy? Don't you think she's a wealth of knowledge?
My brain has been reeling. We're totally going to talk, Charlie. You're
we'll get our hooks in her.
Yeah,
bring
you're
her into the
down the road. We'll have to, you know.
I know. Charlie and I just haven't even met. We have this entire life path journey that's completely intersected and crossed in all kinds of ways. And then we're like, oh, meeting up through our friend Jenny, who's in Chattanooga. And Charlie and I live 20 minutes from each other in Jersey right now. Go figure. Small world, big circles.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Small world. I mean, it really is. The more you travel, the more you talk to people, the more you realize it's such a small world. I mean, I have never, when I lived in Boulder, and I know we're coming towards the end here, but I'll just tell you real quick to kind of wrap it up.
We have some extra minutes too. We just go with the flow. So
okay,
you're fine.
Cool.
It's not going to cut us off.
You're good. Spiritual realm. When I lived in Boulder, I had a group of friends that played, you know, like beer in hand kickball every Monday night at the little outdoor kickball field.
I used to go there all the time and then do that.
Yeah. So we moved to New Jersey when I was in fourth grade, and I didn't play sports and I missed kindergarten and my parents weren't friends with the right parents. And I had I was like the weird artsy kid who liked to dance and didn't play soccer. And so I had like a really hard time transitioning in here. And then I went to the charter school in Summers Point, which my mom founded, which was an art school. And so I kind of had a weird social path through here. And it was not one that was a very full social circle. And so when I moved to Boulder and I met this kickball thing, and I met this wonderful woman, Marcia, who actually vacations in Ventnor. And then I met my brother's best friend's cousin at the football, who's from Upper Township area in New Jersey, which is like about 30 minutes down the road. And then I met my brother's fiance's friend from elementary school, who played soccer with her, also from New Jersey, at this kickball game. I met so many, and two other brothers whose families had, you know, professional relationships with my family in the hospitality space here. But I met more people that I connected with from New Jersey on that kickball field in Boulder than I did the whole time I was growing up in New Jersey. I was like, what is happening? And then I went up to Breckenridge to go snowboarding with one of my friends from Naropa. And she was like, hey, Charlie, see that guy? And he was one of the lifties. And she's like, see that guy? His name tag says Ocean View, New Jersey. And I mean, if you're not from this area, even if you are, like, you might not know Ocean View is in Upper Township, which is a weird concept, the township. Anyway, he points at me and he's like, are you Jake Birch's sister? And I was like, what? Yes. Are you? And he was like, I saw your 7th Street Surf Shop sticker on your helmet, and I knew Jake's sister lived out here and was a snowboarder, so I thought it couldn't hurt to ask. But, you know, here I am in this random line on this random mountain, and this kid just points at me and, like, boom, just, like, named me. It was like, you're Charlie Birch. And I was like, I am.
I love when that happens.
Such a small world, and it's just encouraging to the more you travel, the more you realize that it's hard to not find a connection. And we're really all just here doing the best we can. And all these dichotomies are really just, you know, us trying to make sense of it. But really, if you just drop in, it's like, okay, we're all just human. And we should really give each other some flipping credit, you know, and just cut each other some slack, because there's just too many boxes that aren't serving us, that people put themselves into and put other people into, and you know, the dualism.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Well, that's such a beautiful story. I'm sitting here thinking about how many memories I have with all those kickball players and on that kickball field, and it's so funny. I'm sure I've run by you or seen you, and then I took lessons at the 7th Street Surf Shop before. So funny. I love it. I love it all. Oh, I'm so grateful. Charlie, are you working with anyone one-on-one right now, or do you want to let our listeners how to get a hold of you, or are you just kind of doing you right now?
I'm just doing me. I just stepped down from a big role for, you know, wanting to get back in touch with my rest space, and I'm going to go to my little brother's wedding next week and then take the summer and just kind of enjoy my summer. And go to the beach and be a beach bum, and then see what opportunities arise in the fall actively, you know. But I'm always up for conversations like this. And I will, you know, if somebody out there is listening and they're like, I want to talk to that person, I wouldn't stand in their way.
Cool. So if you want to talk to Charlie, email the Alchemy Sisters at the Alchemy Ascension Academy at gmail.com. Our professional website is coming up very soon, so we'll have a new email, but in the meantime you can do that. And you can always catch us here every Thursday on Blog Talk Radio live at 9 p.m. Jenny, you have any other closing thoughts tonight? Jenny, you with us?
Can you hear me?
Oh, there she is. Yep.
Sorry. I just wanted to say I really enjoyed the conversation. It was such a pleasure connecting with Charlie again. I've just been kind of brainstorming and seeing all these potentials of how we can all work together. And, of course, we'll discuss that later. But it was just a pleasure, and I loved connecting with both of you. And it was a great conversation. Thanks, both of you.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, ladies. It's been a treat. I've been super in the business, marketing, events, you know, business to business, corporate America, podcast space. So this is like a super breath of fresh air to just have a free flowing, holistic conversation. So really, really thank you for having me.
Jenny and I wouldn't do it any other way. so we're so grateful to have had you. And thank you to all of our listeners, and everyone have a beautiful night. All the love and light.
Good night.
Bye.
What if you could change your life? What if the sorrow could become joy and the darkness the light? What if you could heal not only yourself, but those around you? Well, you can. This is Alchemy, and these are the Alchemy Sisters. Join psychic Jenny McDaniel and spiritual advisor Mandy Elam for a magical one-hour journey into esoteric spiritual discussions. DPR presents.